From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Bush is leading the charge against human cloning, with religious leaders, conservative members of Congress, and a smattering of scientists in full flank. Bush is calling for Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle to take up a cloning ban bill that's been shelved in the Senate. The bill carries a 10-year jail term and $1 million fine for anyone who attempts to clone a human embryo for any purpose. This hour, human cloning, it's not some sci-fi future. It could be tomorrow. We begin tonight with Cheryl Stolberg. She's science correspondent for the Washington Bureau of the New York Times and has been following the heated cloning debate in Washington. Welcome and good evening, Cheryl Stolberg.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Cheryl, bring us up to date on where things stand in Congress. What's been passed? What hasn't? What's the timetable?
Well, here's what's happening. In July, the House of Representatives passed a far-reaching bill that would ban cloning for any reason, either for reproduction, that is, making babies, or for medical research. The Senate is due to take up this matter sometime in the next 7 weeks. And President Bush is pushing very hard to try to help Senate Republicans pass a bill that would be identical to the House bill. But Senate Democrats want a more narrow measure that would only ban reproductive cloning, that is, making babies by cloning. The Democrats want to keep the door open for cloning for research purposes.
What are the arguments on either side in Washington?
Well, the arguments in favor of cloning embryos for research are that these embryos could be a very powerful source of stem cells. And stem cells, as you might remember from last summer's debate over that issue, are very useful or potentially useful for treating disease, all kinds of diseases, from juvenile diabetes to spinal cord injuries to Alzheimer's. But on the other side, there are many people who are very uneasy with the idea of cloning embryos.
What's their argument or their concern?
Well, their argument is that it involves creating embryos and then purposefully destroying them. And many people in this country, conservatives like Mr. Bush and religious leaders, believe that embryos are equivalent to human life. Also, they worry that there's no clear, bright line, that once an embryo is cloned for research purposes, there'll be no way to keep those embryos from being implanted into the wombs of women where they could grow into babies. And so the fear is of embryo farms and cloned human beings and that we're opening a Pandora's box.
So there's really two veins of the argument here. One is kind of a reprise of the abortion debate about whether or not, in this case, really the most minute embryo is human life. And the other, are we going to end up creating clones of you and me or clones for body parts?
That's correct. These debates, the stem cell debate and now the cloning debate, often are intertwined with the abortion debate. But, on the other hand, there are a lot of people in this country who are sick and people who have families who are sick, and they see promise in this research. So these are very hard issues that pit the promise of curing and treating human disease against questions of morality in science and the intrinsic worth of a human embryo, a tiny clump of cells, no more than 100 or 200 cells that nonetheless has the potential to grow into a human life.
How are the votes lining up in the Senate?
Well, it's very close. Both sides believe that they each have about 40 votes, with 20 senators undecided. Just this week, Senator Bill Frist, the Tennessee Republican, who's also a doctor, came out squarely on the side of the president in opposition to any type of human cloning. And that's important because Frist is a doctor and senators look to him for guidance on medical matters.
We saw that 40 Nobel Prize winners yesterday put out a statement beseeching Washington not to get in the way of research involving these embryos.
That's right. This is an issue that is very important to scientists. Scientists want an unfettered ability to do their research, and they don't like the idea that government would intervene and try to shut down an avenue of research, whatever it is. This makes them extremely uneasy, and they feel very strongly about it and feel that a ban like the one that the Republicans propose is something that would really have a chilling effect on scientific research in the United States.
Cheryl Stolberg, how do the politics shake out here? We've got an election coming up this fall. Is it falling out along party lines? Are Republicans rallying as right-to-life Republicans? Are Democrats going to be painted as supporting Frankenstein cloning experiments?
It's falling almost along party lines. The bill that would be identical to the House bill, the far-reaching ban, is being backed by Sam Brownback, a very conservative Senate Republican. He's got about 28 or 29 co-sponsors on that bill. Only one is a Democrat, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. She's facing a hotly contested race in her home state, a heavily Catholic state, and you probably know that the Catholic Church takes a very strong position on embryo research in opposition to it. On the other side, there are a handful of Republicans who may come out, more moderate Republicans, who may come out in favor of so-called therapeutic or research cloning. A big undecided, and an important undecided, is Orrin Hatch of Utah. He was leading the charge for Republicans to support embryonic stem cell research over the summer. He says he's still undecided on cloning. I happened to see him up on Capitol Hill today, and I said, what are you going to do? And he kind of shook his head and said, well, I'm still thinking about it.
But as you say, both bills that are floating now would ban reproductive cloning, that is, reproducing human beings from this cloning research.
That's right. There's pretty much universal agreement that cloning human beings is a bad idea. If only at this point for safety reasons. The animals that have been cloned have come out with all kinds of deformities. You may have read about Dolly, that she is excessively overweight. That's Dolly the sheep.
Though we've also read that her creators have announced in the UK that they're moving on to human cloning now.
Well, I wouldn't say that they're moving on to human cloning. Her creators, Ian Wilmot, and others have spoken out very strongly against human cloning, that is, making a baby by cloning.
Okay, and here's the language issue. You're right. They're saying they want to experiment on human embryos.
That's right. And in fact, you raise an interesting point about the semantics. People who are opposed to cloning want all of it called human cloning because it raises fears. And
right.
People who are in favor of cloning for research continually argue that it shouldn't be called cloning at all, that it should be called somatic cell nuclear transplantation, which is the very scientific name for the technique that was used to create Dolly. Mm-hmm. And, of course, opponents say this is playing semantics.
Cheryl Stolberg, what's the deadline? They'll be voting by when?
Well, Senator Tom Daschle, the Senate Majority Leader, has promised a vote sometime before the Memorial Day recess. He hasn't been specific, and we don't even know which bill he'll be voting on. The Brownback bill, the one that would ban far-reaching, you know, would be a far-reaching ban on cloning, is one alternative, but Senate Democrats are drafting this other alternative that would ban reproductive cloning only, and it'll be up to Mr. Daschle to decide how to structure this vote. And depending on which bill comes to the floor for a vote, might give one side or the other an edge.
Cheryl, thanks so much for taking us through the program tonight.
Okay, it's my pleasure.
Cheryl Stolberg is science correspondent for the Washington Bureau of the New York Times.
Life is a creation, not a commodity. Our children are gifts to be loved and protected, not products to be designed and manufactured. Allowing cloning would be taking a significant step toward a society in which human beings are grown for spare body parts and children are engineered to custom specifications. And that's not acceptable.
That was President Bush speaking yesterday about a ban on human cloning that will soon be before the United States Senate. When Dolly the sheep was born 6 years ago, after 277 failed attempts, the floodgates of cloning's bioethics were officially opened. Within days, the world was buzzing about the morality and science of embryo cloning and speculating about what would come next. Today, Dolly has half a dozen lambs of her own, and scientists say they're ready to move ahead with human cloning technology. Proponents of cloning technology say the research can cure diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, fix spinal cord injuries, even cure cancer, but critics call human cloning grotesque, even cloning that has no interest in reproducing carbon copy humans. They warn that science isn't ready for this kind of experiment. Now President Bush is urging senators to pass a bill that would ban all human cloning, but some scientists say the bill would pull the brakes on critical research and new breakthroughs in health. Is human cloning the key to a bright medical future, or is it science's foray into a scary sci-fi world? You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Joining me now from Philadelphia is Arthur Kaplan. He's director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Good evening and welcome, Art Kaplan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Also with us is On Point guest analyst Lewis Gordon, chair of the Africana Studies Department at Brown University and professor of Modern Culture and Media. Good evening, Lewis Gordon.
Good evening.
Art Kaplan, you have spent a lot of time in the world of bioethics, and this is maybe, well, you tell us, but it sounds from this vantage like one of the most complicated and loaded bioethics questions of all. We're talking about human cloning, and people can't even agree how to apply the word. Is this legislation now before the Senate, or that will soon be before the Senate, is this critical? Is this a turning point in America's handling of the future of human genetic material?
Well, I think it is a turning point. I think it'd be fair to say that nothing since I've been in bioethics some 25 years has gotten to the fever pitch that cloning has attained. I went recently to a state legislative meeting here because some of the things going on at the federal level are being mimicked at the state level in terms of bans and prohibitions. The same legislation is rattling around in many, many state legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked some of our distinguished legislators, before you vote on this, where are your genes? About half of them had no idea. So we are wrestling with some of the key achievements of science, mapping the genome, the introduction of genetic testing, the possibility of genetic engineering changing genes, and the possibility of cloning or copying our genes, both in animals, say our pets, and ourselves. And I'm not sure we're really ready to grapple with all of this because I'm not sure most of us know much about genetics or genes or kind of what the issue is. I have a hunch that a lot of the people in the House who voted for the complete ban aren't really sure what they voted for.
Well, you asked, where are your genes? And people are probably thinking in the closet or the dresser drawer at home. We're trying to dig into this tonight. Take us through it once more, because we want to be sure that it's absolutely clear. People talk about human cloning is an umbrella term. Then people talk about reproductive cloning,
mm-hmm.
and then they talk about manipulating embryos.
Right, or therapeutic cloning.
All right, therapeutic cloning. One, I guess reproductive cloning means at some point in the future creating the little versions of ourselves that grow up to be identical versions of ourselves, the Dolly-style path. And the other path is what?
The little mini-me's.
The mini-me's.
Reproductive cloning is what happened with Dolly. An adult cell, you take the DNA out of there, you put it into an egg, and you get it to recreate the same creature again. So that's the thing of Hollywood cloning. That's what Steven Spielberg brought to us with Jurassic Park and its successors. And
Does therapeutic cloning, then, take us closer to reproductive cloning?
I don't think so. The president and his supporters, I saw Bill Kristol talking about this morning, they seem to think if you don't ban all of this, then we'll kind of creep or slide or fall into reproductive cloning. But in Britain, Sweden, China, I had the chance a month ago to chair a hearing at the United Nations on this subject, and I can tell you that at least 10 nations have passed bans on reproductive cloning, no making people, but are going to proceed with therapeutic cloning, making cloned embryos, and then pulling the, if you will, stem cells out of them and using them for research. So what the president says can't be done, at least 10 other countries certainly plan to do.
So it's underway whether the United States is doing it or not.
I think one of the core points here is this is not a debate about whether there will be cloned therapeutic stem cell research, whether we're going to see some embryos cloned and used for research. It's a question about where.
Whether it's here or abroad.
Or overseas.
We're talking about human cloning tonight. Is the human race capable of taking the best of cloning without going too far? And if cloning creates just a ball of cells that save human lives, Is that wrong? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From Boston.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. There's legislation soon to be before the United States Senate that will radically affect the future of human cloning in the United States, if not the world. The question is, are you ready to make a distinction between cloning babies and cloning embryos for life-saving medical treatments? And when President Bush stands up against cloning across the board, is he standing up for human dignity or holding up vital scientific research? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined by Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, and by our guest analyst tonight, Lewis Gordon, professor of modern culture and media at Brown University. Lewis Gordon, cloning has so many reverberations. No one can help but be affected by the thought of it. How do you see this debate shaping up?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is we're living in an incredible period in the history of science and the history of the human condition. The last time something this exciting was happening was when Sputnik, you know, went to space. And I've mentioned Sputnik because there was a great astute political critic and political thinker by the name of Hannah Arendt, who talked in a text called Human Condition about the impact Sputnik had on how we think about things human. And in many ways, we notice the question of the human being is at the heart of this discussion. I noticed in President Bush's speech, for instance, he said life is a creation. Now, that's not the way a scientist would say it at all. The scientist would say life is a natural process. Now, what happens when we say creation? When we say creation, of course, we creep in something that Hannah Arendt pointed out back in the 50s. She said that the error of many scientists is not so much in the research they set up, but in the naivety of believing that the politicians will let them make the decisions over their research. Well, what we're seeing right here is that the decision over this research is not really about the content of it, but more about other sets of issues. By saying, for instance, creation, many conservative issues come in that are under debate right now. The question, for instance, there's agreement that an embryo is life, but that an embryo is a human being is a point of great debate. Now, in the midst of this, one of the things that's in the back of everybody's mind is that the issue of cloning is something whenever we all think of the future, we pretty much see it there on both levels, in fact. And not only the question of therapeutic cloning, but we know that there's an agenda eventually for success in therapeutic cloning.
Reproductive
cloning. But the big question is, how are we going to get there? In many ways, I'm really not at much odds with President Bush over this. I think it's a very important issue, and even if it's a struggle through on the way, that we're going to have conflicts over our conscience, moral issues. In fact, this is something we're going to work out over time. Now, there are very serious issues that we have to deal with in terms of the health benefits that can be gained from dealing with the therapeutic research. And in many ways, we're going to see the extent to which, as political shifts emerge, that greater terms will be brought in.
Art Kaplan, let me put Lewis Gordon's point to you. Is there anything wrong with bringing a moral context, even a religious context, to this issue? If we don't bring it to this issue, what would we bring it to?
Well, I think it belongs. The question is whether, as a matter of public policy, you want to ground it on a religious foundation as opposed to thinking about the ethics. Being blunt, I think those who want to see an embryo attain legislative recognition as a person, something that hasn't happened in the past 40 years since Roe v. Wade, are hoping they can get it done here. So part of what we're seeing is an attempt to smuggle in or stealth import the idea that an embryo is a person from the moment of conception.
That would establish a human life from the very earliest moment of life.
And I think the agenda of social conservatives is then to use that lever to go back and ban abortion, to outlaw some forms of in vitro fertilization, and to stop the practice of amniocentesis and genetic testing of embryos.
And yet there's more than one iron in the fire here. Even if one didn't want to approach the question in that way, that embryo is potentially, if not today, then at some point, the basis for reproductive cloning.
Well, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up because I want to pour a little water on that fire. I'll do it in two ways. First, even regular human embryos, if you make them outside the body, have about a 1 in 5 chance of becoming a baby. Mm-hmm. The ones made by good old birds and bees activities stand about a 1 in 4 chance.
Okay.
So most embryos lack the potential to become a person. We need to keep that in mind.
And embryos in the therapeutic world?
In the therapeutic world, here's the question. What we're assuming in all this is, of course we can clone a human. Now, I know there are many kooks and cults and ufologists who keep telling us they're going to clone people.
They're taking orders right now.
Yes. In fact, if you call some of them, you can get your order in, but...
Call 1-900-CLONE-ME.
Until somebody clones a primate, it may turn out that none of these cells have the potential to become a person. Maybe they develop enough to be turned into cells that we can use, but not people. So here's something to think about. What if the potential isn't there? What if, in fact, we're not clonable? Have we cut off a path of research that I think everybody would agree if these cloned embryos do not have the capacity to become people, which they may not?
Art Kaplan, give us the most condensed short course in how these embryos in this somatic cell nuclear transplantation process, how does that work, and why are people why are scientists so excited about it? How would it be used to do what?
All right, you can get these stem cells from two places. You can get them out of human embryos, and you take an embryo and you literally core out the DNA, like an apple core going into an apple. You pull out the middle, the genes are in there. You take that particular part of the embryo, put chemicals on it, and say, turn into liver, turn into skin. Why? Because the embryo cells have to have the capacity to become every cell of our body. So you're trying to take advantage of that, trick it, and say, become particular cells. Why cloned embryos as opposed to just embryos? Because if you clone something, it's made from your DNA, your body won't reject it.
So last summer, when President Bush talked about stem cells, he said they could be taken from embryos that had already been collected in fertility clinics,
correct.
I guess?
Correct.
But what you're saying here is that these would be specifically created
they're
to be harvested for the individual.
Correct. They're designed for you. If you use someone else's tissue, like it happens in an organ transplant, you have to take some very powerful drugs with nasty side effects to keep that liver or heart in your body.
And again, in super brief, how do we get then from that point to curing Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, spinal cord injuries?
Well, to be blunt, you have the cells in a dish. You put the chemicals on them. You say, turn into a lot of, let's say, islet-producing cells in the pancreas. So you make a bunch of those. You take them out of the dish. You've got to find some way to get them into the body, probably by injecting them into the liver. You hope they go, into the pancreas. You hope they go there and make the insulin that a diabetic is lacking. Let me put it this way, Tom. We're about 5 to 10 years away from curing anybody if this line of research works, and it may not. So that's the honest truth on the other side of this argument. The science is trying to predict where stem cell research is going is like looking at a kite and trying to predict the future of aviation.
We know how that goes. Art Kaplan, Lewis Gordon, stand by. I want to bring into our conversation Dr. Robert Lanza. He's medical director at Advanced Cell Technology, a company in Worcester, Massachusetts. Good evening and welcome, Robert Lanza.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
Your company is one of many around the world that are looking at this whole area of research and seeing enormous opportunities, not only for new products, but for commercial activity. What kind of activities or applications are you focused on? How near are we to this human cloning producing useful products for human beings?
Well, there are literally hundreds of human diseases that we could use this technology for. Say, for instance, you had a damaged heart. We could take a cheek swab from you or a few skin cells and clone you up some new heart cells. These, of course, would be your own, as Art pointed out, and so your body wouldn't reject them. We could also generate, again, new insulin-producing cells if you had diabetes or new nerve cells if you had Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. And then, of course, there's also the possibility that these cells could be used to reconstitute more complex tissues, such as skin, blood vessels, bones, and even whole organs. For instance, if you lost a kidney in an accident, we could grow you up a whole new kidney. Again, this isn't science fiction. It's very real. In animals, we've already been able to use therapeutic cloning to create heart patches. The hope, of course, is to use this technology in patients to fix a damaged heart, very much like you fix a bicycle tire. We've also used this technology at ACT to clone up cartilage, bone, skin, and even miniature kidneys that have produced urine when transplanted back into the animals they were cloned from.
It sounds amazing, but what's to then keep you from taking that same cheek swab and cloning up a whole new me and holding me in a locker somewhere and carving me up for parts when you need them? Should I feel sentimentally attached to that clone of me? And what's to stop you from doing it?
Well, I think, of course, that's why we have laws. I think that, the medical applications of this technology are already legal in countries such as the UK, and I don't believe that banning medical research in the U.S. is going to stop reproductive cloning. I think that the main question here is whether or not you're going to slow down research that, could be used to one day in the future, help literally 3,000 Americans that die every day from a technology that this could use to treat. We live in a great country, and we shouldn't penalize millions of innocent patients just because there may be one or two bad apples out there. Again, that's why we have the laws. If someone breaks the laws, they should go to jail, be fined, or whatever.
And if the legislation that President Bush so wholeheartedly supports should pass, what does that do to your business? What does it do to the future of this kind of research in the United States?
Well, I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, that would bring this to a grinding halt here in the United States. I think that, certainly in a few years, for instance, we may be able to generate whole dishes of insulin-producing cells to cure patients. But unfortunately, if this law does pass, not only would it outlaw cloning and stem cell here in the United States, but it would make a crime, for instance, for a mother to go to a hospital in England or Europe, even if that was the only way for her to save her child.
Would you be moving your company to Stockholm or something, Dr. Ronda?
Well, I think that there's still, of course, the opportunity to continue this work in animals, and hopefully once we've been able to demonstrate this, that it can be used to treat these diseases, that perhaps, we'd be able to change the minds of our lawmakers. Mm-hmm. But again, I think there is a very urgent health crisis out there, and I think that by holding this up, the U.S. has one of the largest and most creative biomedical communities in the world, and it would be a shame to prevent them from having the ability to help further this into the clinic.
Robert Lanza, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Sure.
Dr. Robert Lanza is medical director at Advanced Cell Technology in Worcester, Massachusetts. Art Kaplan, here's the voice of industry saying if it doesn't happen here, it's going to happen elsewhere. We're told almost every day that biotechnology is the future of the economy. This would be a tough one for Republicans to throw out the economic future while they, while they stand up for a principle that people are saying maybe doesn't even really apply.
Couldn't agree more. I think this is a tough one for the more libertarian and let's call it business-oriented part of the Republican Party. You're stuck here looking at a social conservative agenda to get that embryo recognized as a person, and you have to be thinking, number one, why am I interfering at all with reproductive choice? John McCain must be thinking that way. This isn't the place where the government or state should be. Forget about what you or I think about the morality of human reproductive cloning.
And yet this is an extension of what we think of as reproductive choice, too, isn't it? This
exactly.
isn't just
a
man and a woman, a husband and a wife.
Mm-hmm.
This is a scientist maybe choosing to make 400 Art Kaplans.
Right. Well, that's a nightmarish vision that should bring that to an end. But
sorry, Art.
The general principle of respect reproductive freedom is well ingrained, and so just blindly going around saying let's ban it, it certainly should be in my view because it's not safe, but if you looked at it from a truly libertarian conservative view, you may not want to tread on that fundamental right, and then you're thinking, if we're going to be paying the Australians and the Indians and the Chinese and the UK mm-hmm. billions of dollars for stem cell technology cures, what the heck did we make all those investments in the NIH about mapping the genome and
In the first place.
What are we doing?
Art Kaplan, stand by. I want to turn to David Prentice. He's a professor of life sciences at Indiana State University. He's a consultant to advocates in Congress of a total ban on cloning. Good evening and welcome, David Prentice.
Good evening.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
David Prentice, we've been going around and around on this issue of human cloning, reproductive cloning, therapeutic cloning. If I understand correctly, you're saying that the kind of ban that President Bush is supporting is the right way to go. We should slam the door on this stuff. What's your case? Make your case.
Well, I think it is the right way to go, and I think we don't even have to go to the ethical arguments, which are very important in
mm-hmm.
this, obviously. We can just look at the scientific arguments. We seem to be getting the message that this is the only way to go, and this is the only way that we're going to have stem cells of any ilk to be able to treat these diseases. And in point of fact, there's no published evidence that cloning is ever going to be successful in terms of this. There's precious little evidence that embryonic stem cells. But let's look at exactly what the bill says.
Mm-hmm.
All it does is it bans using this cloning technique, this nuclear transfer technique, to produce an embryo. And whichever bill you look at, that's the technique that's used, whether we're just going to ban implantation or the technique itself. even with the embryonic stem cells, the bill does not ban using and doing research with embryonic stem cells. It doesn't ban research on the human embryonic stem cells that President Bush approved. It doesn't ban private funding of forming new embryonic stem cell lines, and it certainly doesn't ban the adult stem cell.
But then why do we have 40 Nobel laureates saying, and I quote, that this would have a chilling effect on all scientific research in the United States? What's that about?
I would disagree with that statement. I think, you know, we hear these phrases that the proponents of a ban are fear-mongering. I think that's fear-mongering.
Mm-hmm.
To say that we're going to chill science, we're going to block science, we're going to send it overseas, that's just ludicrous.
Well, but we would certainly send this stripe of research overseas, would we not, David Prentice?
We would send those who actually want to clone a human being potentially overseas.
Why wouldn't we send those who want to do somatic cell nuclear transplantation overseas as well?
Well, because the only thing the bill bans is using that to do it with humans. So it does not ban using it for animals. And in fact, I believe your previous guest was talking about doing the animal research. It doesn't ban doing it with animals, with plants, with DNA, with
But aren't humans ultimately the point we're talking about Alzheimer's and Parkinson's?
DNA in my lab all the time.
But aren't we ultimately talking about human cloning if we want to treat Parkinson's and Alzheimer's?
No, not at all. And in fact, this past Monday, there was an announcement that the first patient was treated for Parkinson's with his own brain stem cells. Successful treatment, 83% recovery a year later. We've already seen the evidence that the adult stem cells can do this in other types of diseases in human patients, in the animal models. And in fact, that's where the money should be going.
Art Kaplan, take a whack at this. David Prentice says we don't need therapeutic cloning to get the stem cells to treat human beings with new therapies.
Well, it's an interesting view, but it's not one that the National Academy of Sciences endorses. It's not one that the 40 Nobel Prize winners endorse. And in fact, it's not one that any mainstream medical, clinical organization endorses. In fact,
actually, James Thompson of UW Madison endorses it.
Coalition of patient groups that's been lobbying to get this research done. Remember I gave that analogy about predicting the future of aviation by watching kites? Here, what I'd simply say is it may be that embryonic stem cell research, embryonic research from cloned embryos doesn't work. That's possible. But at this point in time, given where we're at with the stem cell having been discovered less than 5 years ago,
I want to give David Prentice the last word in this segment, if you'll let me. David Prentice, what's your bottom line concern here with going further into human cloning?
Mouse embryonic stem cells were discovered in 1981. The whole idea of cloning is we're going to create specifically human beings for the desires and needs of others, whether we're talking about implanting them or not. And there's no scientific basis that this will be successful.
But if it might work, then what's your problem with it?
We don't need to do it. We don't need to be creating human beings to do it. We can do it.
Do you think it's morally wrong?
We're already doing it.
Do you think it's morally wrong?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
If and only if they're human beings, though.
Right. David Prentice, we thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
David Prentice is professor of life sciences at Indiana State University. He's been a consultant to advocates in Congress of a total ban on human cloning, and that's exactly what we're talking about tonight. Is the human race capable of taking the best of cloning without going too far? And is a test tube of cloned cells a human life or a human lifesaver or both? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about human cloning. The U.S. Senate will be taking legislation up in a few weeks that will have a great deal to do with determining the future of all exploitation or the end of human cloning. In the United States, many countries around the world are already using therapeutic cloning to develop new therapies for a whole range of human diseases. What do you think? Is Congress about to slam the door on a key scientific frontier on cures to terrible diseases, or is this necessary for Americans to stay moral, to stay human? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Lewis Gordon, here we have an intersection of human life, of sort of fundamental moral issues, of enormous money. This is going to be a big deal.
Indeed. One of the things about what Congress is doing, at least what the president's proposing, is that it will not slam the door long term, but it sure would put the U.S. at a disadvantage in that area of research.
Well, it would leave a window open to developing things later, but only after research and only after study of the issue, as they
Indeed.
Say.
Indeed. It does, though, contradict the at least the market ideology of the president. On the one hand, the position is that we should let the market determine many of these issues. And one could argue, even beyond the question of the humanistic point, what if the research even got to the point of cosmetic cloning? I mean, there's a certain point if one has a strong market position, let it burgeon.
Cloning for good looks, but yet,
That's the extreme, I know.
There are big issues here, and mm-hmm. no matter where you come from, the idea of another me, another you, 40 or 50 of someone else, well, it's a lot to think about, even if that is a distant prospect and maybe impossible. Let's bring callers in here. Benjamin is on the line. Welcome, Benjamin. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing me in. All I have to say is if this bill passes, America should go and write its obituary, because all these people are doing is nothing but stifling innovation, and they're bringing down American scientists. You know what's going to happen? These good guys we have here are going to leave and go to somewhere else and practice it.
Scientists will go overseas to do the same thing.
And when I hear people talk about morals, all I see is a bunch of immorals. They are, allocating funds to manufacture bombs that will suck out air from people, mm-hmm. And I see the Pentagon, glorify these bombs. The same people will cut down on scientific research that might hold the key to future cure of diseases that have been troubling mankind for ages.
But Benjamin, does it bother you if this should, it may be a long shot, but if it should ultimately lead to really fully cloning new versions of humans, does that bother you at all?
Excuse me, Tom. You see, the problem is that we have let these Christian rights indirectly take over the government, and they are running the government, and they are achieving all the things.
Leave Christian right, leave left out of it. I'm asking you individually.
Who are we to decide? Where is the freedom to decide? Even people have to clone for good looks.
Well, we're the human race. We're American citizens.
It doesn't matter. It's individual right. That's what they choose to do. That's what this country is all about.
We'll chalk you up for liberty, Benjamin. And we thank you for your call. Mohammed is on the line. Welcome, Mohammed. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Tom, I want to make a few points here. What I would want to say tonight is that creation of human life or any reproductive function is an exclusive right of God, the one creator, sustainer, and nourisher of the world. Mm-hmm. The next point, I support the President of the United States when he says that life is a creation and not a commodity. Mm-hmm. And this is what exactly all the true books sent down by God through Prophet Moses, Prophet Jesus, and the last Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon them all, those books have told exactly the same thing. And when we say God bless America on every of our streets, please, let's stand up to it.
But Muhammad, what if this research would not create human reproduced clones, not little Muhammads and little Toms, but rather just cure Parkinson's disease, cure Alzheimer's?
Tom?
Yes?
Exactly the same point also that God has told in all those books. Let's not lead our lives the way we go to Parkinson, or the way we go to AIDS, or the way we go to diabetes. God has given a balanced manual. He is our manufacturer. He gives a manual like a Toyota gives us a manufacturing manual, when to put the oil, when not to put the oil. If we impress upon our brilliant citizens that let's take the religion seriously, not in a hatred manner, very nicely for our kids and our beautiful moms.
Mohammed, we've got your point, and who can help but be at some point, you'd like to think there's some kind of cosmic plan here, and if we're ever playing with it, this is playing with it.
There is a parable of a drowning man of faith where as the lifeboat comes by, he passes it by, the ship passes by, he says, God will save me, and then finally he meets God, and God said, I sent you the lifeboat and the ship, why don't you use it? In many ways, one could argue that this technology could be completely compatible with a belief in God.
Right, and this Art Kaplan, you're the bioethicist. This does come right down to that core question is, do we leave creation or whatever you'd like to call it just as we found it, or is it mankind's destiny to intervene?
I think think it's our destiny to intervene. I think God gave us the gifts to figure out something about how to intervene. When I see a test tube baby, when I see a person who is paraplegic have a child through medical technology and intervention, when I see people who are older having children because they can be technologically assisted to do so, I would say, on the one hand, our ethics and our values already are to try and assist nature, to try and go past the boundaries of biology. And I guess I'd say, coming in a different direction, if President Bush finds the prospect of making clone cells repugnant because it's somehow artificial to intervene in the world, he's going to have a big problem with a lot of medicine.
Charlie is on the line. Welcome, Charlie. You're on the air, and be quick if you can, my friend.
All right. Hi, I'm a scientist, and I am a supporter of embryo cloning research, but I'm also very much opposed to reproductive cloning and, you know, it's what I mm-hmm. call baby cloning.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make the point that scientifically, I think Bush is totally overselling the ban that he's proposing. He says that, I mean, this is a point that comes up over and over again. If we don't ban embryo cloning, then the next thing you're going to have is baby cloning.
Yes.
And this is the
why does that oversell, Charlie?
Because, in fact, if you look at the animal studies, it's really clear that only 1 in 20 at best of the embryos that are put into a womb of a mother are going to give rise to birth. The rest are going to abort or be miscarried.
Still, it is 1 in 20, so?
So if you're trying to do this in people, and it's illegal, you're trying to do this in secret, for every 5 successful births you have, you're going to have 95 abortions and miscarriages. And I don't know, how are you going to hide that? I mean, in a free country like ours, there's just no way that you're going to persuade women who you've told them they're going to have this miracle clone baby, and all of a sudden in the mm-hmm. 7 months of pregnancy, they have a miscarriage. They're not going to go to the press. They're not going to complain about this.
Charlie, we got your point, and our time is running down, but we thank you for it. Art Kaplan, Charlie saying, look, we're not going to surreptitiously move on to reproductive cloning. It's too big a deal.
Well, if you're worried about surreptitious cloning, it's going to take, and his point, Charlie's point, was even an understatement. It's going to take, remember, Dolly started with 300 embryos, only 20 of which developed and only one of which made it to term. So you're talking about a large number of women, a large number of pregnancies. I don't think you're going to have a secret cloning operation. But I will say this, if you're of a mind to do it, then a ban won't stop you. You're still going to be sitting there saying, arrest me or jail me or whatever it is. This notion that the protection we have that will assure us that no one anywhere at any time tries reproductive cloning as if the United States passes a ban, I think doesn't hold much water. What we can say is we don't approve of it, and I'm all for saying that. It's not safe. We're likely to make a lot of dead and deformed babies. But do I believe that it's going to prohibit this from ever happening? Well, about the same degree as I believe that if we have speeding laws, I can get in the Mass Pike and not see people going by me at 80 miles an hour.
It sounds like we're playing God either way. Art Kaplan, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Arthur Kaplan is director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Oh, Lewis Gordon, we've had a lot here. We've just got a few seconds. Last word.
Well, the last word is just simply that this debate will have to continue.
yes, it will. But the legislative effort will come to a head and soon.
And unfortunately, we're going to see this issue is going to be connected to the political tides in the next election.
Lewis Gordon, thanks so much for being with us this hour. Should Congress pass the Human Cloning Prohibition Act, you can vote at our website. The address is onpointradio.org. In a moment, a diary from a rabbi living in Jerusalem on family, sons, and service. This is On Point. Last night, we aired a diary from an American woman married to a Palestinian man and living in Ramallah. Tonight, we hear from Rabbi Shimon Felix. He lives in Jerusalem with his family. In this diary, he writes about the fears of a father and the duties of his son, who is in active duty with the Israeli military in Ramallah.
About a month ago, on a Saturday night, a bomb went off at the Moment Cafe in downtown Jerusalem. Some of our kids were home and some were out. We called the cell phones of all the ones who were out and ascertained that they were all okay. Close to the blast, but okay. Then we listened to the sirens on the streets outside for a while heard one last news report on the radio, and went to bed. The next morning, I woke up and put on the radio for the news. The names of the victims from the cafe bombing were being read. I heard my son's name, Uri Felix. I knew that he was okay. I had spoken to him on the phone after the bombing, but I ran up the steps two at a time to his room to check. He was there where I knew he would be, under the covers. A few days later, I drove past the cafe and saw the makeshift memorial, the candles, the flowers, and the black-on-white death notices fluttering in the breeze. Seeing his name there in big black letters, along with all the others, made me want to turn the car around, go home, run up the steps, and make sure he was still in bed. About 3 weeks ago, my oldest son, David, got married. There were 430 guests at the wedding, about 40 less than we had originally planned for. Almost none of our relatives from the States, or any of Yael, the bride's relatives from England, had come. They were too afraid to make the trip to Israel. The bombings and shootings had scared them off. A few friends and relatives who live in Judea and Samaria also told us that they would not be able to make it. The roads were just too dangerous, and they were trying to travel as little as possible. For the wedding, we hired extra guards. The wedding hall supplied two, but after the attacks on the bar and bat mitzvah celebrations in Hadera and Ashkelon, it seemed that the terrorists were targeting specifically Jewish events, celebrations, in an effort to demoralize us, to hit us where it really hurts. So everyone felt that a little more security was in order. The wedding itself was wonderful. Many of our friends and relatives said that a celebration like this was just what we needed in such terrible times. At the actual wedding ceremony, under the chuppah, the wedding canopy, there is a custom that the groom breaks a glass in order to demonstrate that a joy is not complete and that we still mourn the destruction of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, symbolized by the broken glass. Just before he broke it, David said to the guests that he wanted us all to take this moment, as he and Yael were about to be married and begin building a new Jewish home, to remember all the homes that had been destroyed over the past few days, weeks, and months by terrorist attacks. 12 days later, David was called up for emergency active reserve duty. I couldn't help thinking how like a Hemingway novel this felt, the handsome young husband, the beautiful young bride, and the war. I tried very hard to banish these thoughts, as we all know how Hemingway novels end. Thankfully, David has been in a relatively safe position, overlooking but not actually taking part in the fighting in Ramallah. He told us that one of the reasons he was not closer to the action was the extraordinarily high rate of response to the call-up. Usually, whenever a reserve unit is called up for active duty, there is a high percentage of no-shows. Guys who are ill, out of the country, too busy, in the middle of a course, just about to close an important business deal, or guys who have just gotten married. This time, the response was 100%. Everyone who was called up came, ready to report for duty, which of course meant that there were more soldiers than were needed. I guess that after a year and a half of being afraid to get on a bus, sit in a cafe, or walk in a downtown street, after a year and a half of feeling that depressing, sinking feeling every time you turned on the radio and heard a slow, sad song which told you, oh no, another attack. Wait, in a minute, after the song is over, they'll tell us all the details. After a year and a half of your kids going to more funerals than you've been to in your entire life, because all the kids seem to know one another, and so many, many kids have been killed. After all that, I guess we all feel that this is what we have to do to try and stop it.
Rabbi Shimon Felix lives in Jerusalem. Diaries like this begin with emails from listeners like you. How are the news stories you're reading, watching, and hearing affecting your life? How is the crisis in the Middle East, the war on terror, other current issues intersecting with your day today? What emails are you sending? What letters are you receiving from loved ones far away and close to home? We'd love to hear from you. Send us your submissions for future audio diaries to onpoint@wbur.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR, we're funded by